Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Moscow. Felix Leit reporting for CBS News and the Moscow Times. We go immediately to the capital and the largest city of Kazakhstan, especially to the largest city where, because there's no longer transparency in Kazakhstan, the government has resigned. There's turmoil in the streets. There's violence. We go to Almaty because it's a large concentration and we have some version of the story via Russian media. And Moscow Times is how I'm following this story. Felix, a very good evening to you. The President Tokayev is said to be in conversation for a long time with the previous president and man who reigned Kazakhstan during the Soviet era, Nazarbayev. Nazarbayev is now being mocked, we're told, by your reporting, by the crowds, the gatherings, the turmoil in the streets. Old man out is what they're saying. Old man out. That's about Nazarbayev. What do we understand is driving the collapse of the government? The internet is taken down. There's no transparency. The airport might be unreachable. What is driving this? Good evening, Felix.
Good evening, John. Well, yeah, you know, first, I think we have to recognize, we have to acknowledge how extraordinarily fast all of this has played out. You know, if you had told me sort of, 8 hours ago that we'd be here now, then I would have, you know, told you to get out, quite frankly. You know, extraordinary, you know, events here. But I think, you know, this seems to be sort of primarily sort of, you know, a question or a wave of unrest that initially was sort of given birth to by sort of economic grievance. You know, there's a lot of discontent, as we understand it, in Kazakhstan, you know, about sort of issues like corruption, about issues about sort of low wages and sort of deprivation. And I think, you know, this really just sort of boiled over. You know, this is a story very common to a lot of sort of post-Soviet countries. You know, there's not so much sort of active political engagement, you know, but there is a lot of sort of dissent. And if some kind of spark emerges to sort of give voice to that discontent, then you can have you really can, you know, see fireworks. You know, this reminds me quite a lot of what we saw in Belarus, you know, a couple of summers ago, where things really blew up very quickly and very, very few people were expecting them to do so. So I think, you know, this is really an extraordinary sort of revolt against the Kazakhstani political regime, because, you know, Nursultan Nazarbayev has been in charge of Kazakhstan in one way or another since about 1988. You know, he was sort of the Soviet general secretary of the Kazakh Communist Party, then he was the first president of Kazakhstan, and then he handed his powers off to Tokayev and became the rather modestly titled leader of the nation, which he sort of remains now. But what was quite interesting today is that in his speech, his sort of address to the nation, Tokayev, who is very much Nazarbayev's chosen successor, essentially said that sort of Nazarbayev is being sacked from all his jobs. You know, he's being moved out of his job at the Security Council, which is his primary way of sort of exerting control behind the scenes. So this does seem to be very specifically aimed at this guy, you know, Nazarbayev, in every way, the sort of the father of the Kazakh nation. So as I say, it's an extraordinary outpouring of anger and of discontent.
It's more complicated still. Felix and I are doing the best we can. Nursultan is the first name of Nazarbayev. It is also the name of the capital, which is a new creation since the end of the Soviet Union. The large city is Almaty, and Almaty is said to be the scene of violence. There are deaths reported. And this is a large nation, large in territory, but a very small population, comparatively speaking. I believe about 19 million people, concentrated in the cities, of course. It is also deeply rich in natural resources of all kinds, minerals, certainly fossil fuels, certainly natural gas and oil. It is on the shores of the Caspian Sea, meaning that Kazakhstan is regarded as one of the possibilities of developing Central Asia. The stands have great riches. To get them to market means that you can use pipelines or railroads. All of that is in the future. And yet now Kazakhstan calls it into question. And Felix, forgive me for the lesson, but this is early days. And it's very, as you say, surprising that Kazakhstan falls apart. What do we know about the Putin government and Nazarbayev, the Putin government in Taka and in the president's statement about Nazarbayev? Do we believe that Moscow has a sought outcome, or is it riding this out as the rest of us watching the violence?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It's hard to sort of give a sort of an unambiguous answer to that. Generally, what I would say is that Moscow has had a very good relationship with Kazakhstan. You know, it's not been sort of bosom partners as it has been with Belarus. It's been a more sort of, but slightly more distanced relationship, but generally a very, very friendly one, I would always emphasize. And indeed, Putin and Nazarbayev have very sort of respectful mutual relationships. They're both sort of very much veterans, political veterans who've been around for a long time, so they do know each other well. You know, right now, Russia observes Christmas a little bit later than the West. So what we have now is sort of very much the holiday period in Russia. And so reactions have been a little bit muted. You know, it's been pretty pro forma. It's been sort of, you know, like, we call on all sides, you know, for readiness, you know, things like this, you know, readiness to sort of for dialogue, for compromise. And so we don't really see a clear Russian position emerging. That being said, you know, Russia is never happy to see sort of instability, to see unrest, to see, you know, revolution, if you want to use that word, in its sort of neighborhood, in its near abroad. And so if you look at the sort of the loyalist Russian sort of state affiliated media, you'll get a very negative picture. You know, you'll get sort of, you know, accusations that this is a Maidan. You know, they use that word for the Ukrainian Revolution of 2014, which is a sort of a red letter, I think, for sort of Russian public figures. So there is a sense in which this is something to be sort of worried about, something to be very wary of. But I think, you know, the Russian position will take time to develop, and it'll probably be sort of clearer towards the end of the week, I would suggest.
Let's stay with the Russian media, because this is fog of war in Kazakhstan right now.
Yep.
Look at the map. You'll see why it's critical, but so is Ukraine. And we're on the eve of diplomatic conversations at NATO, where the foreign ministers will meet virtually, and in Geneva, where the U.S. and Russia plan to start their talks about Ukraine. How is it reported on Russian media? What are the Russian people told in Moscow, Felix?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of anticipation for this sort of these new meetings over Ukraine. You know, I think in general, you know, the topic of Ukraine has maybe faded a little bit out of the media in the last week or so, but that's really only because Russia is in the holiday period right now, you know, and people don't want sort of 24/7 incitement to war on their television screens, of course. So, you know, it's I think generally, you know, there's not a sort of a cardinal change from what I often say to you, which is I think that in Moscow, you know, and this is what you see projected on the media, is that there's obviously, you know, a lot of underlying hostility to Ukraine, to the EU, to NATO. But sort of layering on that, there is a sense that sort of Biden personally is viewed quite positively, I think, because he's seen as, you know, an establishment politician, a very experienced guy who can sort of, you know, who will have the sort of the maturity and the sensibility to sort of deliver the agreement that Moscow wants. I think that's a little bit of perhaps projection, a little bit of wishful thinking from Russia, but that is very much, I think, the angle that a lot of the Russian media comes at this from.
Also, Russian media reporting memorials closing, memorial in two pieces, memorial about human rights, memorial about archives in the Stalinist period. How is that reported to the Russian people?
Well, you know, this was a topic that sort of did achieve quite a degree of resonance, you know, for the sort of liberally minded, oppositionally inclined section of Russian society. You know, Memorial was really a sort of a totemic organization, and its closure was sort of was very symbolic historically. You know, I wouldn't go so far as to say that sort of the Putin regime is sort of pro-Stalin or pro-Stalinist. You know, it doesn't deny the fact of historical repressions, but it it takes a view that they shouldn't be talked about. That sort of why should we sort of be ashamed of our past? We want to talk about the good things, right? We don't want to rake over old graves. I think that's basically the position. And I think for a lot of sort of certainly the intelligentsia in Russia, you know, that was seen as sort of betraying the memory of those who died in the Stalinist period. And so it was a very, very, very emotional sort of thing, I think.
I puzzled whether the closing had to do with the part of memorial that was linked to the Navalny supporters who have been driven out of Russia.
Well, certainly there was an argument sort of made that sort of by state prosecutors, I should say, in court, that sort of memorial at its outset had been a sort of a noble organization, but it had engaged in sort of mission creep and it had sort of taken on a wider sort of human rights vocation. So I think, you know, that was certainly part of it. But, you know, it's very hard to know what exactly sort of signed Memorial's death warrant, as it were. You know, there were any number of things that could have offended someone influential in the government. And I think, you know, whether it's sort of working with Navalny supporters, whether it's sort of investigating KGB crimes, because that's seen very, very sensitively by the contemporary security services, the FSB, who are very politically influential. You know, it could really be any one of these things or multiple.
Felix Leitch, CBS News and Moscow Times, watch both for updating on what we know about Kazakhstan, the large and critical and right now darkness visible part of Central Asia. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.